Welcome to another episode of The Brand Called You, a vodcast and podcast show that brings you leadership lessons, knowledge, experience, and wisdom from hundreds of successful individuals from around the world. I am your host, Ashutosh Garg, and today I'm delighted to welcome a very, very senior professional from Mumbai, India, Mr. Huzaifa Unbala. Huzaifa, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much.
Huzaifa is the founder and senior partner of JHS and Associates LLP. So, Huzaifa, let's talk about JHS and Associates. Tell me about the scope of work you handle.
First of all, thank you so much, Ashutosh, for giving me this opportunity. It's a pleasure to be there with you today and
thank
your
you.
Audience. My scope of work at JHS is largely strategic and transformational.
Mm-hmm.
On the strategy side, I largely deal with issues surrounding growth of the firm,
mm-hmm.
how the practice has to grow in various territories, geographies, enlarge the existing footprint,
mm-hmm.
also go to international shores, think of product innovations, mm-hmm. see what's happening in the marketplace, what's happening with competitors, learn from them, imbibe those lessons, and then build on the practice.
Mm.
And also hunting for leadership talent to grow the practice,
okay.
and onboarding and inducting leadership talent into JHS,
mm.
as well as looking out for firms with like-minded strategic approach to growth, with a base of solid base of ethics and integrity, wanting to merge their practice,
mm-hmm.
with us. So exploring that,
okay.
and getting them into the JHS role.
Very interesting. And what were some of your challenges as you started to build JHS?
When you start a practice from scratch, you have to fight with the universe and make it a successful shop.
Mm.
So I faced all those typical challenges that a founder would face about 9-10 years back when I started the practice, starting from a small apartment, a residential apartment, to actually convincing clients to giving me mandates and work, also convincing people to join the firm. So, starting from there on, we've come a long way,
mm-hmm.
but still we have got miles to go. I look at it as a ship,
mm-hmm.
that we have managed to construct, and
right.
we have started sail. The voyage has started, and still, we have to crisscross the 7 continents,
mm-hmm.
and we've had our fair share of typical challenges.
Mm-hmm.
The most critical challenge that I've faced in the last 10 years is working with larger companies,
mm-hmm.
where they always tend to go with larger brands and multinational brands. So the trust deficit exists between our firm and the larger multinational companies. So we have to bridge that over a period of time. So that is one single biggest challenge. And second
mm-hmm.
is to attract the best talent in the industry.
Correct.
These are the two principal challenges that we have faced.
Very interesting. And, you mentioned that there are some of the big firms. Who are your major competitors, and how are you different?
So largely, competition for chartered accountants, audit and tax firms in India is pretty invisible, because there are almost, 2 to 3 lakh practicing professionals.
Mm-hmm.
Then you have the large multinational firms and the very large Indian firms. And typically, the accounting and auditing practice is looked upon from a time period perspective, where, in board meetings, when an audit firm gets appointed, the first question is, when was this firm established?
Hmm.
Even the regulators in India typically give prescriptions that, audit firms, especially the banking regulator,
hmm.
should be in existence for a minimum period of 10 to 15 years, should have minimum threshold size, etc.
Hmm.
So the higher the vintage, the better positioning of the firm.
Mm.
Is in the marketplace. So that's one area where firms grow over a period of time.
Mm.
They grow on a reputation, on a word to mouth kind of a strategy largely.
Mm.
So protecting your reputation and growing your reputation in the marketplace is significant.
But it has always been said that if you are smaller, you are more nimble. You can take faster decisions.
Yes, yes.
How are you different from the big ones?
So absolutely. See, one is that we don't have any legacy.
Mm.
We have a very clean and honest reputation in the marketplace.
Mm.
So when clients come to us, they are rest assured that first of all, it's a, as you rightly said, it's a flexible firm, which is able to respond to client needs much faster than a larger firm. So we just have about 16 partners and about 300 people. So we are able to respond to client needs in a much faster way. That is one differentiating factor. Second is that we are a close-knit firm. So we have developed centers of excellence across the 9 offices. So a particular partner would specialize in a solution and a sector. So whenever a client comes in, we identify a partner with solution and sectoral capabilities to create a unique combination, a center of excellence to service the client.
Right.
So we have created certain gold standards of service delivery and execution. There are 5 principles around mutual respect, on service excellence, on responsiveness to clients, thinking along with clients, adopting their problems to solve their problems. So we have created our own service philosophies, which are a little unique than any other accounting firm in terms of servicing a client. So they experience something which is a little different than the other auditing and consulting firms when they work with us.
Very, very fascinating. So, you know, over the last few years, there has been a lot of pressure on the profession, owing to a few companies and a few firms. What, in your view, is needs to be done to manage such challenges?
Indeed, there have been so many frauds and scams and scandals that have emerged globally. I look at it, from a perspective that, you know, it's the societal balance, Ashutosh. You know, unfortunately, across the world, the climate of ethics has come down in terms of the index. And there are short-term temptations with owners of business to exploit possibilities in the marketplace, to cook their books of accounts in such a way that they can get investor money, bank money, etc. As well as the regulators always look at it from a different lens. And even in general, the expectations from the auditors have changed over the years. The spirit of audit and the audit theories always suggest, and accountants and auditors are trained to be watchdogs. However, there is a growing expectation gap where the market and clients are expecting them to be bloodhounds. So auditors have to make that subtle adjustment and balance the equation between being a bloodhound and a watchdog.
Okay.
I think that is the single biggest challenge that the profession is facing. So the ability of auditors to also include forensic techniques in auditing, although they are not mandatory for a statutory auditor, but they are good to have if the auditors are able to include forensic auditing techniques while they are doing audits, they would be able to balance the equation, not actually become a bloodhound, but at least start barking. So there is a deterrent, short of biting.
Very interesting. And you know, when you talk of watchdogs and bloodhounds and forensics, I'm assuming that the client would also be willing to accept it, because, you know, from a non-executive director's perspective, there is generally a lack of transparency of what's going on in the organization. And a lot of it depends on what the auditors are telling a non-executive board member. But the management may not want to share everything. How does the professional accountant step in?
So here again, there has been a huge amount of disruption. Accounting is happening on clouds. There is so much of digital transformation of businesses that are happening. So if you ask me that if there is a smart auditor, you know, he can really play out the data story so well to his benefit. And that's what we all are doing. So there is nothing to hide, actually. The client cannot hide anything in today's world.
Okay.
Because every byte or bit of information is available in the servers and in the data of the client. And now auditors have come of age. They are able to analyze and trend the data in such a way that they are able to create very, very good data dashboards and stories to see what are the exceptions and what are the outliers. So they can protect their interests and they can protect the interest of independent directors as well as of non-executive directors. And they can ask the right set of questions.
Okay. Okay. My next question to you, Huzaifa, is that this is now the age of the millennials and the Gen Zs. What is your view on whether the millennials and the Gen Zs are coming into the profession to give a new lease of life?
Indeed, they are. Yeah. They are. They are far, far smarter than, you know, the earlier flock. I came out in the late 1990s, you know, 22 years since I qualified. And, you know, when I go back in time and see what kind of work I have done in my articleship training days, it was quite comprehensive. It was a lot of hard work. Mm-hmm. But the current lot, I have about 70 trainees with me in the Mumbai office. Mm-hmm. They are very smart. They are amazing. And the kind of questions they ask, they force the principals and the mentors to think about, you know, those answers hard and read up more and come back to them in terms of, you know, what is a logical answer. Because they have read everything on the Google. They have read everything. They have formed their own views and opinions and then come for a second check. It's not like our days where we used to go simply with a question to our guru and ask them that, sir, what is the answer to this or how do I approach this problem? They already have multiple solutions to a problem. And then they come to pick the best one. So that's the biggest difference I see in today's generation. And, you know, they are far, far superior in adopting technology.
Okay.
So the older chartered accountants in my firm find it difficult to compete with the younger generation because the younger generation is so skillful in adopting to cloud accounting and the newer concepts, robotic process automation, that the older generation chartered accountants somewhere feel little left out.
Interesting. And when you look at technology, how much is technology changing the profession now?
I would say it's completely transforming the profession. Mm-hmm. Completely transforming the profession. Each and every aspect of audit or a tax solution that a chartered accountant renders to the client has been completely digitally disrupted and transformed.
Okay.
So much so that, you know, the accounting, the base accounting, you know, a bank reconciliation statement, a classical match of the accounting bank balance and the bank balance in the bank account, the matching of that has completely been transformed.
I see.
Gone are the days where, you know, the accountant would sit with two statements and tick off on both the statements to see what is unreconciled. Everything is automated. The bankers are emailing the bank statements. They are getting into the ERPs of the world. And there is an automated batch-wise bank reconciliation happening through a robotic process interface. So it's completely disrupted. And for accountants and auditors, the world has completely changed. And COVID has only accelerated that pace of change further.
Very interesting. So, Huzaifa, now let's move to the next part of our conversation, which is about on startup ventures. You're a board member. Tell me about startup ventures and what you do.
I sit as a board advisor, board member on a few startups, and I really enjoy working with them.
Okay.
A few of them are in digital learning technologies. A few of them are MCG businesses. And I really enjoy the journey working along with the founders and seeing their business models evolve over a period of time and the sheer ambition which they carry as a startup. The vision and the ambition sometimes even scares me as part of the journey. Being an accountant, I'm a little conservative in my thought process. However, I enjoy being with them and kind of be there as a conscious keeper to steer them in the right direction where I feel that it's not going in the right way. As far as financial stability of the startup is concerned, disciplining them on their business plans, mentoring them in the board meetings, ensuring that they comply 100% with all the applicable rules and regulations. So I play a stewardship and a mentoring role with them.
Very interesting. So let me ask you a few questions relating to startups since you sit on so many boards. Is it better to have a single founder or two founders or three founders?
Very interesting question, Ashutosh. So I've seen this journey in the last decade or so with, you know, quite a lot of startups. Mm-hmm. Even few of them have been clients. Typically, when there is a combination of people who start a venture together, they are very passionate about their thoughts and ideas and their roles and responsibilities. And sometimes then they end up, with a quarrel and with a disengagement. Mm. And then it becomes very difficult to untie the knot. Mm. And, whose idea it was, and whose IPR it is,
yeah. And
who started what. So my suggestion is that, even if there is more than one founder, perfectly all right. Mm. But the rules of engagement should be clearly documented in a principle of, as a guiding principle document or a partnership document or a shareholders agreement, which clearly defines the roles and responsibilities, the do's and don'ts for each founders.
Right.
As far as solo versus partnership model, I would say that, a solo is a good model if there is a invention, if there is a huge discovery. So there are a couple of startups that I have been associated with who have discovered algorithms. They have discovered certain, groundbreaking technology. So for them, a technocrat, a single founder is good enough.
Mm.
But where the idea or the concept needs market testing, in that situation, the more founders, maybe more than, one or two are much better.
Mm.
Because for them, market test is very important. Client acceptance test is very important, and that is painful.
Mm.
The journey of developing a product, launching it into the market. So really, you need a shoulder to cry on.
Mm.
So more than one is much better.
Okay. My next question to you is that based on all your experience, what are some of the reasons that startups fail?
I think 80% of the startups globally, and these are global statistics, fail on account of financial indiscipline.
I see.
Yeah. They start up with an idea, with a very strong idea and conviction that they will succeed. Then there is a round of funding through family and friends. Then they hunt for angel investors. Then they hunt for serious investors. But in their journey, they realize that they are short of funds, or they have spent funds they have not prioritized in their fund spending efforts, and funds have been spent in the wrong place.
Mm-hmm.
So there are a lot of financial indiscipline issues, because nowadays I see a lot of startups, with strong technology ideas, but a very weak business plan.
Mm-hmm.
Or a financial forecast and projection. And there lies the devil.
Mm-hmm.
So really the issue is, financial discipline, good financial management, taking assistance from experts in terms of doing a proper financial forecasting.
Okay. And one more question relating to startups. You've sat on so many startup boards and you support so many of them. One of the big desires of every startup founder is to become pan-India and go global. My question to you is that at what stage should a startup founder start thinking of scaling up?
I think once the idea is tested in the marketplace, and there is proper client acceptance, and it has been domestically proven, say with a couple of years of experience, foundational experience would be a good time to venture out of the country into international markets.
Mm-hmm.
So the higher number of user cases you have in India, in Indian markets or domestic markets,
mm-hmm.
would give you that much more confidence to succeed in the international. So okay. From a timing perspective, it all depends on the business model, whether it is a completely e-model or there is a hybrid element of technology local selling. So it depends on the business model, but I would say, in a couple of years would be a good time.
Okay. So now I'm going to now move to the last segment of our conversation, which are a few questions for you personally, because our guests always like to get to know, our viewers love to get to know who our guest is. So my first question to you, Zephyr, is as you look back at life, say the last 20, 25 years, what would you say are three key milestones or pivot points in your life or your career?
I think the first one definitely would be the choice of taking the accounting profession. And I go back long in time after my 10th grade, visiting the family doctor and seeking his advice. And he told me that, you know, he has two daughters.
Right.
One is a doctor and one is a chartered accountant.
Mm.
And the chartered accountant seems to be more busy and more happy.
Mm.
It was a very simple advice he gave
okay.
me. And that transformed my thinking. And, you know, I took up the accounting profession. I think that was one big milestone for me.
Right.
Having succeeded there and then starting my journey as a accountant. I would definitely say that was one milestone. And the second one is the milestone of starting my own firm in 2012.
Mm-hmm.
So that was the single biggest milestone. And the third one, I believe, is yet to come.
Okay. Wonderful. Wonderful. So let me move on. I have time for two or three more questions.
Sure.
For someone who's achieved so much in life and who's, as you said, third milestone has yet to come, from where you stand today, what does success mean to Huzaifa?
To me, success is a sum of a lot of parts.
Mm-hmm.
And they are all moving parts. I would be very happy if, you know, the most deserving employee or staff member in my team becomes a very, very rich man, for example, would delight me. And I would really consider myself successful if, you know, that were to happen in my firm and in my lifetime as one of the parts of success. The second is that, you know, as I mentioned to you, that I look at it as a voyage and it's a global voyage. So we have to crisscross 7 continents and we have to work with the top 5 names in each sector. Unless we have won their trust and they have given us a mandate to work with them as a professional services firm, be it in accounting, taxation, or outsourced work, whichever area it is, at least getting to the top 5 names would really mean that, you know, we have arrived or we have been successful. Third is adopting technology in all the areas of our practice. Currently, we have done it well in auditing, but we need to adopt it across taxation, consulting, and several other areas. So these 2-3 parameters to me would, you know, really mean that we have been successful. We are on the way. We are learning. We are taking steps.
Wonderful. Wonderful. I've got time for now 2 more questions.
Sure.
A follow-up question to success is, who or what inspires you?
There are a lot of inspirations in life,
mm-hmm.
many, but I would single out 2. One is M.K. Gandhi.
Mm-hmm.
I read his philosophies a lot, especially on governance, on trusteeship, on way of life, his quotations, and try to imbibe. Second is a spiritual leader of mine, Imam Ali, who's again a standout personality.
Mm-hmm.
And I read about him a lot and his teachings and his way of life. And there are common messages in both of them. They are about silent leadership, silent communication, and compassionate actions. Both of them have got a very common way of thinking and lifestyle, simple living and higher thinking. So always how you could persuade people through your compassionate actions is something which I take back as a leadership style, as a leadership philosophy, that without creating too much of a noise and too much of a disturbance in your associates' life, be it your team member or be it your family member, how silently you could persuade them through your compassionate actions is something which will make you more successful. That's what I learned from these 2 individuals.
Terrific. And my last question to you, there'll be a lot of very young people who will be watching this conversation with you. What would your advice be to a young accountant starting off on her or his journey in life?
My advice to them would be that as an accountant, as an auditor, you are writing the history of the client. Financial history, record keeping. And the client will be as honest as you are as an accountant or as an auditor. So if the auditor or the accountant is honest and steadfast in his dealing with the client and is clear in his intention and clean in his intention, so will the client be and so will the society be.
Mm.
So my honest advice to everybody would be to stay steadfast on the path of ethics and integrity and the right attitude. And I think the technical skills can be acquired and everything else falls into place.
Mm.
As far as, you know, you go out with good intentions and clear and clean intentions.
Very interesting. Huzaifa, thank you so much. It has been such a pleasure speaking to you. Thank you for telling me so much about accounting and as well as giving such amazing advice on startups. Thank you again and good luck.
Thank you so much, Ashutosh, for inviting me. It was really a pleasure being with you today. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to The Brand Called You videocast and podcast, a platform that brings you knowledge, experience and wisdom of hundreds of successful individuals from around the world. Do visit our website www.tbcy.in to watch and listen to the stories of many more individuals. You can also follow us on YouTube, Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Just search for The Brand Called You.